much for this. You really make this possible. I know there's all this hand-wringing about all the other players. In my humble opinion, it has to do with North Korea seeing exactly what was needed to have an effective deterrent. And also, we've got to give it to President Trump. Even in his, even during his election campaign, he said he would like to have a hamburger with Kim Jong-un. So, and now leave it to the Democrats to try and be the spoilers they were, and as they have been for Syria and all that has been going on. But I don't want to take away from what happened in South, what the South Korean leadership has done, but it is secondary. I think President Trump eschewed the military-industrial complex and the deep state and got this project going forward, and that's all, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for Flashpoints here at KBOO Portland. It's 11 o'clock, and it's time for the Dirtbag. Glenn and Jim are in the studio ready to talk about everything about gardening today, and they're going to take your calls ultimately. So stay tuned for that after this announcement.
KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Cirque de Schilling 1-year anniversary on Saturday, June 23rd from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Schilling Cider House in Portland. The Cirque de Schilling is an adult-only cider carnival featuring over 25 different ciders, as well as a dunk tank, ring toss, face painting, and much more. Again, that's the Cirque de Schilling 1-year anniversary on Saturday, June 23rd from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Schilling Cider House, 930 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, Jim, we've made it.
We did.
To another dirt bag.
Yep.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to the Dirt Bag, a program dedicated to edible gardening. And we talk about other things, too.
And, you know, I think it might be the only program like this in the Northwest. I mean, that we're just devoted to edibles.
Well, maybe it's not an important topic.
It is.
It's worthy of its own program.
Yes, I agree.
That's Jim Gilbert. My guest to the right, my permanent guest, at least when he's not traveling.
That's right.
We didn't finish up on your travels from last year, last month, so we'll try to get that in too. We've got a full show, but we always have time for your questions, 503-231-8187 if you have a gardening question. Last month we did answer a few questions outside of the edible range. Roses, I believe. Were we talking about roses? Yes, transplanting a rose.
Yeah.
Was that right?
Yeah. Cool. Although you could, rose hips. You can.
Okay. Qualifies.
So, we can make an exception there, I think.
That's right. Well, we've got our plant of the month is, we're going to talk about biennial veggies. Just to give you an idea of what those plants are that, what I say, can give you about 3 seasons of harvest. It's one way of looking at it.
It's pretty good.
Jim will be talking about watering in new plants, and we've got some hot weather coming. It varies from mid-90s to upper 90s next week from today, or
wow,
something like that.
Yeah, that's warm.
Tis, and it's June. By the way, all my plant selections today will have to do with days. The day length, because we will peak here in 8 days or something like that with the summer solstice.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
Longest day of the year.
Longest daylight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you meant.
Yeah.
I know that's what you meant.
Yeah.
And I thought we might have a discussion, too, of the oils that's an organic treatment for pests and diseases, and what's the difference between horticultural oil and dormant oil, and whilst you should never use one when you mean to use the other, almost. We've also, we'll be talking about what's happening on the farm. Jim, what's going on there? I have a question, too, about why we might want to be painting the trunks of our fruit trees.
So good, good question.
About that. Mm-hmm. And summer pruning. It's almost time to begin that, the ideal time. Probably a little too early now, so. Anything in the way of plant sales or events that you are aware of we need to talk about?
I don't have any the top of my consciousness.
Okay.
So I think it's pretty much summertime. And everybody's busy.
Yeah.
There are always Home Orchard Society workshops, and I encourage people to go to homeorchardsociety.org and find out what's going on. And there's a lot of stuff you can learn at those workshops.
And I suspect there's other workshops, too, that if people want us to announce their event, we'd be happy to do that.
And we did mention last time about having people also write to us if they have something they particularly want to talk about. Want
a topic
to cover.
They want covered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's the address for that?
Well, you could write to me through the KBOO website. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you exactly what that is, but people do it, so I know that it's possible.
Good.
If you have questions, I think Tammy would be able to take care of that. So if you call that number, the 231-8187, she would be able to talk you through that, I'll bet. Well, biennial veggies. It's not that they're not perennial. I guess really the only perennial veggie that I can... Well, there can be several. I guess rhubarb comes to mind. It's technically a vegetable. But, so that's perennial. We could, you know, our listeners will probably come up with something. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking more about the biennials now. And this would include carrots, beets, chard, those plants that you plant in the late winter, you can, and get them out, and you can harvest through the summer, the fall. They'll survive the winter if it's not necessarily a hard winter, which last wasn't. And then they'll produce a little bit more in the spring before they bolt. That is to say, will form seed pods, grow big, 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 big. Mm-hmm. They'll get 4 or 5 feet tall. And all of these, parsley is another one. I don't know if I mentioned that one. When they form their seed pods, are excellent insect-attracting plants. So if you want to help with pest control in the garden, let some of them flower. I wouldn't recommend them going to seed, because then you're going to have a lot of little plants all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, some is fine, but... And many of these that we grow, chard and spinach and parsley. Parsley probably grows true, but the chard and beets are oftentimes hybrids, and you never know what you're going to get then.
And plants like carrots and beets and stuff, you for the root itself, you don't want them to go into the second year, because then...
They get pretty tough.
Yeah.
But I harvest carrots all through the winter. Mm-hmm. This past winter, I harvested when we had this forecast of sub-20 degree temperatures. I can't remember exactly, but I was worried enough that I went out and harvested all of the, virtually all of the beets and carrots. And then we never had the real cold snap, and the plants that I left in the ground survived fine. But I harvested most of the nicer ones. Mm-hmm. So it works well. Tammy, are we... Oh, darn. Jay, if Jay wants to call back, we'll get to you soon. Too much gabbing there on my part. But those are some biennial. There's an old Master Gardener joke that an annual goes from seed to seed in 4 months. You plant a seed, and in 4 months' time, roughly, the plant will produce another seed. A biennial, you know, it's 2 years, and I say you get at least three seasons of use. And a perennial is any plant that, had it lived, would bloom or flower year after year. Mm-hmm. That's just the joke. Mm-hmm. But of course, they're going to live.
Yes, of course.
And since we are here in gardener's paradise, most plants that we put in the ground will grow and grow well. Mm-hmm. Okay, let us... Should we get to our first tune?
Sure.
Let's do that. This, if Tammy's ready for it. She gives me one thumbs up. All right. This is Deborah Coleman, a guitarist, whose song, this is called Light of Day. Pretty good, because we're going to have a lot.
Sunshine, I'm burning. I'm burning through this haze. I fill my heart with hope. I bring better days. Dark clouds all around. Burn through the gloom. A brand new day shining in my room. Need the light of day. Need the light of day. Chase the darkness from my room. Keep on moving, blues falling like rain. Another day I ride on this hellbound train. Where shall I go?
Sorry about that, Deborah Coleman. Light of Day.
Good selection, Glenn.
Well, we're going to go to the pseudophone here. Tammy's going to, she knows what Jay was going to, kind of what Jay was going to ask about, so.
First, I apologize to Jay because I think I accidentally cut you off here. I hope you're listening to the radio now, because I'm going to try and repeat your question to Glenn and Jim, and that was regarding a cover crop that you planted that is now coming up, and you were concerned about the time of year that you planted it, but it's up now, and I think it was Australian peas?
Australian field peas, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she said they're up and kind of falling over. What should she do? She asked about cardboard, putting cardboard over them at this point, or till them in, under, or...
Well, at this point, I'm assuming that she planted them in the fall, because if they're that big and falling over, then that's likely. No, I wouldn't put the cardboard directly on them. I would cut them off at the base. And boy, you know what I used, just as an aside here, when I got rid of my crimson clover, and that's very dense, and you know, you can use a weed whacker just to cut it off, but then it throws everything all over the place. I used a hand scythe. Mm-hmm. And I use that a lot when I'm clearing grass around beehives at various locations that I'm at. For one, I kind of like using it. But for two, it did a marvelous job. Just, you know, the crimson clover is pretty tender, and it just cut it right off at the soil level. And then I composted that. I didn't have any place to use it for mulch. But so this is what Jay could do: just hand cut it, either with pruners or loppers, I suppose, or if you have a hand scythe. You know, this is like the typical communist hammer and sickle type. I guess maybe call it a sickle.
We call it. I always called it a sickle.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I guess the big scythe or the you know, when you use both arms, if you're cutting grain or something like that, maybe that's called a scythe. And this, then to differentiate, this is a hand scythe. But okay, a sickle. I use a sickle, and it was great. The important thing is to do it sooner rather than later, because we don't want the cover crop setting seeds. It's okay to bloom, but then when it starts forming seeds, it uses quite a few of the nutrients that are available to it. So you'd rather have those in the ground.
So one of our systems with a cover crop like that is we mow it and then we rototill it, or dig it in, because then you've cut all the top pieces pretty small, so they incorporate really easily into the soil.
I suppose that would work. I mean, you know, home gardens and little garden beds, it's could be rather messy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I suppose you could catch it.
Yeah, sure, you could do that too.
If you did it, so good suggestion there.
Yeah, it works for us.
But it's time to get rid of that cover crop before it goes to seed. And also because if it does go to seed and starts dropping them, then you've pre-planted your cover crop where you don't want it.
And you want to get it into the soil so it'll decompose and enrich the soil. And that's
if you're going to incorporate it in there. I hardly ever do that these days. I just cut it off and then plant around in the midst of the roots that are laden with nitrogen nodules,
mm-hmm.
which is where I want the nitrogen,
right?
Right there in the soil.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome, Jay / Tammy. We have hot weather on the way. You might be going to plant plants. Think about planting plants now. It's got another week, so you probably would you.
Well, you can plant things, but be careful.
I mean, yeah.
You know, the watering is going to be an issue. And if it's a plant that comes out of a greenhouse or some place where it's, you know, it's not been
tender.
Susceptible to all this hard, you know, to hot weather like that, hot sun, it's going to burn. So, but if it's been outdoors and you're putting it in the ground, the main thing is just watching the water, which we wanted to talk about anyway.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
And the thing I always caution folks to do is, if you're planting a plant from a pot, which would probably be the only thing you'd be doing this time of year because the bare root season is long past, remember that the soil around the root system in that pot is going to dry out much faster than the soil surrounding the planting hole. And so you can think that you're keeping your plant nice and wet by overhead watering the whole area, but you really need to concentrate on getting some water at the root system, and especially in hot weather, because it takes about 2 weeks for the roots to start picking up the surrounding soil moisture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's good information.
Yep.
And it also brings forth to the fore the maybe the benefit of mulching.
Yes.
And just keep that hot sun off the soil, which will zap the moisture.
Yeah, mulching's real important.
And... okay, so that's anything else we want to say about the hot weather coming? We had talked about having a Dirtbag Dictionary term on transpiration.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I do have another one, kind of officially, if you will, and that is water chutes. But I'm going to talk about that when we get to summer pruning.
Mm-hmm.
But so talk about transpiration.
Yeah, I think it's a nice big word. and basically, it is the process by which the plant pulls up moisture from the soil and lets it out into the atmosphere. And so plants are transpiring at different rates depending upon how they're growing. There's not a lot of transpiration in the winter. And so, you know, water, that's where you get into dangers with overwatering, because if a plant has leaves and it's not doing much, you don't need to water it much either. But this time of year, there's a lot of transpiration going on, and that, of course, pulling that soil out of the roots means you have to replace that water on a pretty regular basis.
So, and it uses, it's pulling this water out of the soil, and it's using some of it.
Yes.
Presumably. And what purpose then does losing it, what's the purpose of that? Can you tell me that?
That's a really good question. I honestly can't remember. I'm thinking perhaps it's for cooling a little bit of the plant, but I'm, honestly don't remember the reason why.
Maybe somebody younger with more able minds than us. Because I'm sure we've learned it at one point.
Yeah, it probably seems like that's probably the case. Not being a horticulture student, however, I didn't have it drilled into me.
That's true.
But maybe if my partner Lorraine was listening, she could call me. I don't think she likes to hear my voice during that often. So.
Turn that thing off.
Right.
Okay. Well, it could be cooling, because when water evaporates, the temperature does drop. That'll be going on, or it goes on a lot in honeybee hives this time of year. Mm. They bring water back to the hive. They use a lot of water. It's just tremendous. And they'll put drops of water around the hive on top of the cells, but they'll also hold it in their mandibles.
Oh, wow.
And then they'll get a current of air going through the hive by beating their wings all in the same direction.
Yeah.
And to evaporate the water, and then it cools the hive. And that's important because when bees are raising young, their brood, they need to keep the hive at a constant 92 degrees.
Huh.
So yesterday when it was 48, it was 92 degrees in where the brood was.
Wow.
And they generate heat by somewhat similarly to how we do, by shivering, by contracting their wing muscles.
Wow.
Probably didn't need to do a whole lot of that, just because of there's just so many bees in the hive right now. It's pretty easy to keep it warm. Well, but what about this next week when it might be 98 or 99 and they still need to keep it 92? That's when they set up this current of air with these drops of water to cool the temperature,
mm-hmm.
kind of the old swamp cooler.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to my friend in Uzbekistan a few days ago, and he told me that in southern Uzbekistan, the temperatures had got up to 43 Celsius, which is approximately 110 or
goodness.
Higher. That's hot. And Northern California can get to those kind of temperatures too, which is just bizarre to me. I mean, it's really hot. Thankful that we're only going to the 90s.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that's transpiration. Maybe it's not exactly pronounced that way. Transpiration?
Transpiration.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And that brings us to, let's have a little discussion of oils.
Okay.
Horticultural oil versus dormant oil. And I asked you in an email, could you talk about the differences? And you said something to the effect that, well, there's the same oil, it's just a matter of concentration.
Well, that's what I'm trying to understand from you. If you had some other idea in mind?
Well, I didn't know if they were different formulations.
From what I know, and all the practice I've done with oil, is that it's basically the same oil. It's just one is used in dormant season in a higher concentration, and then the other is used during the growing season in a lower concentration. Because if you use the dormant concentration, it will burn the leaves, defoliate the plant, actually.
Right.
If you're not careful.
And I've even forgotten what kind of type of oil it is.
Well, it's typically a very highly refined normal oil.
A vegetable oil or
no,
a petroleum oil?
Petroleum oil.
Yeah. It's considered organic. It's approved for use in organic farms and gardens.
Right. And then, of course, there's neem oil. There's some other oils that are used.
But I guess I was specifically limiting it to the dormant oil versus the, sometimes it's called superior oil or horticultural oil.
Yeah, and again, I think that I think you're speaking about the same oil, just how much it's concentrated.
But you don't do the gardener doesn't do the diluting themselves. It's, you just buy a dormant oil versus buy a horticultural oil?
Well, I haven't been in a garden store to buy that kind of oil for a long time, but we used to do it ourselves.
Oh, and on how much would you cut it?
Well, it would say on the bottle, and I don't remember exactly,
but you'd say
so many tablespoons per gallon of water for the dormant spray and so many for the summer spray.
Well, I don't use it. I haven't used it in I don't know how many years, at least 15.
Yeah.
Do you still use it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the main thing we use for aphids.
This is the horticultural oil.
Right.
So this time of year.
Of course, we use the lower concentration.
Sure.
This time. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to mix those up because
that's right.
You'd really defoliate it.
Right. But it's pretty effective, and we don't like to use anything, severe harsh chemicals in our nursery, so it works well.
Okay. So that's the difference there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back to the phone. Greg, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Morning. Hey there, guys. Marijuana is legal nowadays, and I'm growing some plants in my backyard, and I was curious if you had any growing tips.
I don't.
I don't either.
Somebody gave me probably about 2 lifetime supplies, so.
Fair enough. Well, you guys should experiment in your backyard and have some tips for next year.
Yeah, well, the same principles I would imagine would apply to marijuana, and I imagine you're probably not the only listener that's growing
yeah.
it. But specifically marijuana, we don't grow it at our place, so I can't give you any specific tips. But
I grew it about 4 decades ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, just probably give it a shot next season.
Yeah, that 4 decades ago is probably not in your front yard either.
Correct. And in fact, it can't be this now either.
No.
Greg, do you know what the rules are on that?
You can have 4 plants at your personal house, and you can grow them as big as you want.
But can they be in plain sight of everybody?
I mean, it's supposed to be in your backyard, I believe, but I'm sure you can do it in the front yard. Probably somebody would take it though.
Right. After you tend it, then.
The local harvest.
But we should get an expert on in that as a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you want to plant them by June 1st. So next season, get you guys going.
Yeah, right. Like I
have
room
take care, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
We could talk about something else edible.
Yeah. Jim brought in the honeyberries.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, they look like a elongated blueberry.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same color. They have the bloom on it, which is appears the little powdery material.
Mm-hmm.
Elongated, and Jim described them as tasting like a little bit tart strawberry. And I said that's exactly what they taste like. They're tasty, but they do have the little strawberry aftertaste. Tammy, you're welcome to come in out for our next break to see what we've got here.
Well, I was impressed with how much they look like a blueberry.
Yeah.
So I thoroughly expected it to be sweet like a blueberry, but it's not.
No.
Yeah.
And I asked Jim if it does get a little sweeter, and he says, well, no, not really.
No, but it's there are different varieties. This one happens to be one that we brought back, actually plants or seeds from Japan years ago. And it's one of our selections we call Blue Hokkaido. It's one of the better ones. It's a really beautiful bush, really upright, attractive plant. I was doing some calculations, and we picked about 2.5 pounds in less than an hour. I mean, it's small. They're small berries, but I was impressed with the yield. And and they're very high in antioxidants. The juice is like ink.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And what I'm doing with these particular berries, I got about 6 pounds of them, is that it's kind of interesting. In New Zealand, they're very interested in this crop. There's a local fruit growing group there. Their latest publication has a big article about it, which I wrote actually, and our pictures are in it and all that. We're sort of minor celebrities in New Zealand right now. And so we're going to extract the seeds from these and send them to New Zealand because they can't import the actual plants themselves.
Oh.
So the main goal, I was so excited this morning to see how many I was getting, because they're very anxious to get the seeds. And of course, for us, it's a great trade, because we get some cred then and some points toward getting pineapple guava and feijoa material from New Zealand to bring back here. So it's,
how many seeds are in one berry, would you say?
Oh, there's probably a dozen or more.
Okay.
But they're very, very tiny, as you can imagine. So it's an interesting process of cleaning them. Basically, we'll extract the juice. We'll basically press them, and get the juice out of the berries, and then what's left over will be the skin, and we'll wash the through a sieve, wash the seeds through the sieve, and that'll leave the skin and some other larger pieces, and then we'll have to take that. But then we'll take those seeds and put them through a smaller sieve so that they now we have the seeds. Then we'll dry them.
Wow,
it's an interesting process.
Yeah,
but
is the plant evergreen?
No, it's deciduous and very hardy, actually, down to about minus 40. So it's a tough plant. And another nice thing about it is it doesn't require acid soil like blueberries do. So you can plant it as a regular garden plant.
Does it get as large as a blueberry?
There's different sizes.
Okay.
So, like for example, if you look in One Green World's catalog, where most of our plants are sold, most of our varieties, you see descriptions about them. The Blue Hokkaido is a more upright growing plant, and then we have one called Blue Moon, which is a more prostrate, and has more interestingly has sort of velvety leaves.
Uh-huh.
Very very beautiful. Also, garden.
Do they have to be pruned?
For best yields, every couple of years, it's good to prune them. We don't do a lot of pruning on them.
So not like blueberries, where annual pruning is recommended.
I think you could get every 2 years is fine for them.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
But nice, they're ripening about the same time strawberries are. So it's a pretty. It's one of the earliest berries.
Right. That was supposed to be muted.
That was your phone. Okay.
Let's go to our next selection here. This is from the Ford Brothers. I've played Robin Ford before, but this is a couple of his brothers, too. This is called Another Fine Day. Ford Brothers.
She gave me a great big smile. I rolled out of bed and said, "Oh, baby, what's it? We'll go outside a little while." I looked out the window. The sun was shining. Oh, what a beautiful day! Looked like a painting. Don't buy that cotton lane, Monet. And I felt so good inside. I said to myself, it's gonna be another fine day. Another fine day. I got a call on the telephone. An old friend's voice said, "Hey there, how you been?" Everything was grand. And then I asked, how was everything for him? We talked for hours about people and things and what we were doing today. It felt good just to hear his voice. I told him I would soon make it over with. Things don't get tough. There are times I feel I've had enough, but most days everything is going my way.
Most days, everything is going my way. Another fine day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're approaching, what, 15 hours of daylight or something like that?
You know, when I...
14?
Many years ago, after I first started traveling to the former Soviet Union, I made friends in St. Petersburg, which was then Leningrad. And I do that to this day. Days like these, when there's these long days, I look north, and I just think of those white nights. You know, what they used to call them, Bielianochi.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it was just fantastic. You know, you'd be three o'clock in the morning, and it'd be light out.
Someday.
Yeah.
For me. Okay, Jim. You know what time it is?
Garden Stumper.
That's right. It's the Garden Stumper time. Okay, this garden stumper comes from Jim.
Okay, good. My vision is getting bad, Glenn, and it's hard for me to read the stumper.
Yeah, that's pretty small print there.
But I can remember what I suggested.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of apple rootstocks that are identified by letters and numbers. And the letter is the letter M. And then the numbers can be things like 26, 7, 11, and so forth.
126, I think, Eber.
Yeah, there's a 27.
26 and 27.
There's a 9.
Okay.
So we'd like to hear from a listener is what does the letter mean, and what do the numbers relate to?
Yes. It's kind of a double.
Yeah.
A double one. So we give away... two no prizes.
That's right. And if somebody comes up with one of them, that would be okay too. Well, you have one no prize for that.
So, so specifically, we're looking for an apple rootstock. What the letter M stands for in this case, and what the numbers mean.
Yep.
Okay. So if you know the answer to that, or if you have a gardening question, it's the same number, 503-231-8188. Seven.
I was thinking when I came up with this particular garden stumper that it would be interesting if we could find a way to give a prize, you know, maybe two free tickets to the Jim and Glenn show. They could come down and sit with us here while we do this or something like that, or, you know, something.
I don't think we'd have any takers on that one.
No, that's not true.
That's hardly a prize.
Well,
I got to go sit with Jim and Glenn.
We could bring in some fresh figs or something, you know, to entice, to make it a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, that's something to consider.
Yeah. So anyway, M and a number.
Yeah.
What's it mean?
Okay. Well, I want to move into summer pruning now. This is when I do most of my pruning, or maybe all of it, as far as fruit trees go, because it's much better weather, certainly now, than when your tree is dormant. All of my trees, essentially, are the size that I want them to be, so I don't want them to get any bigger, which would be an argument for dormant pruning. Because if you prune when it's dormant, then the tree will put out more growth. That's just what it does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I don't want that. I would rather keep the trees the same size. And so my standard operating procedure is, rules, I should say, is... The ideal time is between July 15th and August 15th. I've done it as late as first week in October, which is somewhat chancy, but I haven't had any problems with that. But it could be, just weather-wise, it could be a problem with disease or whatnot. You know, things get busy. Usually I'm finishing up in September on a pear tree that just has so many new growth, water shoots, if you will, or suckers, and they're two different things. But we'll talk about that when we talk about the dirtbag dictionary. But so that's one. Midsummer, July 15th through August 15th is ideal.
And Glenn, why do you think that summer pruning, I'm really curious, what is the physiological process that makes the plant be less vigorous if you prune in the summer versus pruning in the winter?
It just doesn't have the time, for one, to put on the new growth. You know, you're just cutting off everything that happened in the previous year. And it varies by fruit type too. Apples don't seem to have as much new growth as pears do. I mean, pears are just more vigorous plants in general than apples.
One of the dangers that I, with pears in particular, that I've experienced in the process of using buds from those trees is that if you prune too early in the summer, you get new growth that's quite tender. And so later pruning would be better than early, with pears at least, I think.
Well, I think that's true with maybe most trees. I had somebody come by the other day who had a quick question. He said, you know, what do you think about summer pruning? And I said, that's all I do. He says, all right, that's what I'm going to do this afternoon. And I said, well, I think it's too early to do it. So I'd rather err on the side of too late than too early.
Right.
Another rule of thumb is I'm only taking off branches that I can clip with my hand pruners. So no chainsaws, you know, pruning or even loppers or just saws, just hand pruners. That's a little subjective. If you've got strong hands, then I guess you can right. take a bigger limb out.
Great large pruners.
Right.
Big,
yeah.
Huge hands.
Yeah. And you need to be more careful because there's fruit on the tree. Also, when the tree is bare, when it's dormant, then it's a little easier to see the structure of the tree and can prune it for that purpose. And it's harder with the leaves on. But once you get into the habit or the timing of every summer, then you can you'll see during when the tree is dormant. I said, well, I really should take that branch off or something. And you can do it when it's dormant. If you're going to switch to summer pruning, you want to do it, you know, essentially 6 months after your dormant pruning. You don't want to wait a year and a half to do it because they would be too big at that point. Speaking of points, Tammy says we have a phone call. Jersey. Good morning, Jersey. Do you have a question or an answer?
Well, actually, a little bit of both.
Okay.
The answer, I'm guessing the M is the mollus genus name. And
Jim says no. Jim says no.
Oh, fried.
But
fried.
That's a good
guess.
Yeah,
because
mollus is the scientific name for apple.
Right.
Yes, one more part. You're going to answer the part about the numbers?
Well,
I was just going to say that. So essentially, you get the same prize whether you win or not. You're a winner. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
My friends always told me I was a winner to get my appearance up. I don't know.
All right, Stuart.
I'm going to be probably falling my face on the number guess, but okay. it's probably either a numerical position in terms of the heirloom. Would that be possible?
Well, you were going there, but then you veered off right at the last moment. Is that kind of right, Jim?
Yeah, you know, it probably is something to do with some position, but the meaning of the number has nothing to do with that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I'll give a clue if Glenn will permit me.
Of course I will.
The name that you came up with for the meaning of the M, the letter M. The first three letters of the meaning are the same first three letters of the word malice.
Yeah.
But there's more letters to it.
But, you know, I don't want Jim to steer our listeners down the wrong path. It's just coincidental.
It's totally coincidental.
Okay, right.
Okay, because I'm falling off the ledge now.
Right.
Okay.
Is that close enough for a try?
Yeah, thanks. That was great.
But it's 2-2 or 0-2, but great tries.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his thinking.
Right.
Appreciate it.
All right, well, take it easy, guys.
Yeah, right. Okay. Who's next on the firing line? Jim.
Oh, I'm here already.
Okay. Okay.
Hi.
Hi, Jim. What you got for us?
Hi. So the M stands for mauling.
That's it.
Ding, 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 ding.
You know where that is?
New York?
Well, that wasn't part. Thankfully, that wasn't part of the question.
No.
It's actually in England.
What did you say?
It's in England. Yeah, right. Okay. What else then you got for us?
I think the numbers, the smaller the number, the more dwarfing the rootstock.
Is that what you're looking for?
Well, you're really close.
7 and 9 are fairly dwarfing, and 26 is semi-dwarf.
That would be better for consumers, wouldn't it, Jim?
Yeah, it would
I
be.
Mean, which Jim?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but that's...
It's really close. I think we should just give him...
Okay, we don't want to...
Give him to him. But it's basically... The numbers do refer to the variety of the rootstock, but the number itself doesn't refer to the degree of dwarfing. So an M27, for example, is much more dwarf than an M7.
Oh.
M11, but in the Malling experiment station, my guess is that they probably were, those numbers were in a row of trees, or I was the 27th selection or something, and so that's how they got the number. But they definitely do refer to the dwarfing potential of the tree.
But the number itself doesn't have any degree of dwarfness.
Right.
Like I said, it would be nice if it did.
And one of the things, years ago when I first started growing apple trees, I was really concerned about this because the words dwarf and semi-dwarf are so used so interchangeably and imprecisely that when we first started growing and when we founded One Green World and even Northwoods Nursery, we made a point of telling people exactly what rootstock it was. So if you wanted to look it up, you could say, okay, an M7 is a semi-dwarf rootstock. It's not a dwarf. M26, on the other hand, is considered a dwarfing rootstock. And then
Then
we also put in a chart of the sizes so you could get an idea, like an M26 would produce a tree from 8 to 12 feet in height, and M7 would be 12 to 16 feet in height. And you know, when you go to buy a tree at a garden center, an apple tree in particular, it would be good to ask them, what is this actual dwarf rootstock that you're growing this on? So,
and the big box stores will probably won't be able to tell you at all. Well, what does it say on the label?
Dwarf.
And there's other types of rootstock that have different letters, like P. P22 is one I use a lot, and that's Poland, I think.
Yep.
That it stands for.
And there's Geneva ones that have numbers. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different ones. But the M series were probably the first significant series of dwarfing rootstocks.
And still very popular.
Yep.
So Glenn, another thing you were talking about, your beets and carrots as biennials.
Yeah.
But I would like to encourage your listeners to think about winter gardening and starting cabbages, Brussels sprouts, and different plants to hold through the fall and into your winter.
Yeah.
And it's that time of year to start seeds for, cabbage, Brussels sprouts. You could wait till later for overwintering. Till August, you could start overwintering broccoli and cauliflower and things like that.
Yeah, and onions. I normally start my Walla Walla onions in August to overwinter.
Yeah, so, but, people should think about, in this climate, you can keep plants like beets and carrots and Brussels sprouts, cabbage, kale, and stuff all through the winter.
Yeah, I say we can harvest about 12 months of the year. You can't really grow things during the real light, limited months, but you can harvest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
so that's great. Great information, and it was something that was on our list to talk about. So good deal.
Yeah. Thanks for the answer. Thanks for the answer, Jim.
Bye.
Okay. Let's take our last musical break here. Our last tune was called Another Fine Day, and this one is called Another Bad Day. Mm. Mm-hmm. This is Melvin Taylor in the Slack Band.
My eyelids are heavy, my eyeballs are weary and red. I'm so tired of playing this game called getting ahead. I take 3 steps forward, have to turn around and take 2 steps back. Somebody else come and tell me, is this where I should be standing at? I can't hold on to your feeling. If it's gone, then so let it be. Understanding's an illusion.
if your vision ain't what I see. Too much of something for a little of nothing. At least that's the way it seems. But now I know better, being born in someone else's dreams. This world ain't my corner, and I won't claim it to be.
Another bad day. Not a bad day, though. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Okay, let's go once more to the phone. Victoria's with us. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning. Oh, so I was given a rootstock for an apple, and it said 26 E as an elephant, M, and then L, A. And I was told that it was a semi-dwarf.
Yeah, well, the EMLA is a longer way of saying the East. I don't know what the LA actually stands for. East Malling was the origin of that. I mean, that's where those came from, the East Malling Experiment Station.
And how do you spell Malling?
M-A-L-L-I-N-G.
Oh, just exactly how I thought it would be spelled.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a definitive place where a person can find out about this? I mean, like, either on the internet or somebody
has
a list of all of the current rootstock, because I would love to plant some more apples in my yard.
If you know, back in the day when we started the nursery, there wasn't anything such as where you could go do a search, but I'm 100% certain if you did a search on you know,
any of those names,
you'd find it. And you mentioned M26. We consider that to be a dwarf rootstock because, and as I mentioned,
it is dwarf.
That's what we consider. But remember, the word dwarf is just a word, and the size is what we're talking about. So it's a eight, you know, somewhere between 8 to 10, 12 feet is where the tree should peak out at.
That's what I want.
Yeah. It's a good rootstock.
Jim, is the EMLA 26, which she referred to, and the M26 just the same thing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. My next question is I have a Gravenstein, and I did not get around to winter pruning it. So would it behoove me to do it between July and August, like you said? Because I pruned it radically the year before. I actually took out with a chainsaw, several parts of the tree. And I understand that they want to go, 60 feet, 30 feet, something
if it's a standard tree.
Yes, it is. It's a very old one. And I use it for a base for my apple cider. Well, actually, not the base, but the medium, the middle part. The base, sort of semi-base and middle, and then I use Liberty for flavor and aroma.
Uh-huh.
And then I have a late apple, which it's an anonymous apple tree. I don't even know what it is. For just, you know, anyways, I've done it 2 years in a row, and my cider turns out beautifully. So.
Yeah. Gramstein's a great all-purpose apple.
Yep.
Yes, and we like it as an eating apple, and we make applesauce too, so we're good on that.
To answer your question, yes, okay. Yes, go ahead and prune it now, or else in the midsummer.
Yes, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And you say only the ones that you're hand pruner, but we've got some pretty vigorous growth here.
Yeah, the Gramstein is a vigorous grower. I think you could get by with that. You're not going to kill the tree.
No, I'm going to use some loppers on the ones that grew straight up, but now they have 40 apples on them. So.
Yeah. Harvest the apples first, of course.
Well, we're thinking of joining a gleaning club and have somebody come here and glean for us. So
this is my Gravenstein is every other year of producing, it seems, and we're on this year.
Yes. That same thing, last year we didn't have hardly a crop at all.
Yeah, it's going to be.
And some years we have stripes on our apples, and other years there aren't any stripes, which I find very
Yeah, that could be a sun thing.
Oh, okay.
Don't know.
All right. Well, it's good questions. To know that my I didn't get it grafted this year, so I'm just growing it. My rootstock.
Yeah, keep it watered.
Yep, it's in a pot in a shady place, and I water it every other day. So.
And I encourage you to join the Home Orchard Society because
I did. I was a Home Orchard Society member like 3 years ago, and I actually went for an apple picking, and somebody threw some deadfalls in there, and our apple cider didn't turn out. I'm just, it's all a matter of following instructions and being clean and doing it in your own yard, I think.
Yeah, great. Well, we have the Home Orchard Society events, there's a great chance that you can talk to people there about all these different interesting questions regarding rootstocks and
cider apples.
And some cider apples and all that.
Oh, well, I've been to several of, I go quite often to the events.
Okay.
It's just that I was confused by the EMLA, and I couldn't find anything on the internet. So,
well, we've got Answer Man Jim here for that.
Okay, one more question. I bought at one of those events the Scion event, and I bought from One Green World Seaberry, a male and a female. Planted them, and the female got some kind of what I thought was maybe a fungus or something. And it ended up taking, the roots went sideways in all directions. So I ended up taking out both the male and the female. I potted up one of the male plants that came from the runners and one of the female plants. I've got them in pots right now. But I had to grub out all of those roots because I had several other things growing in the area. What was the problem, do you think?
It's hard to say what would be. We have no disease issues on the plants that we grow, so I'm not sure what disease could be happening.
Copper. It turned a coppery color, and it was on the main trunk of the seaberry, and they were both about 2 feet tall.
You have any large dogs?
No.
Yeah, that,
no animals in this particular area.
So a couple of things that, one, if you have those two plants in pots, that's good because the plants are grown from cuttings, so that the female and the male are the same plant, the ones you have, the cuttings one from the roots. What we found is that if you plant a seaberry in like a garden bed, and then surrounding that area is grass or some kind of thick vegetative growth, the plant will not be so likely to put out runners.
Well, that's what happens. There's grass surrounding this. It's a big, huge hill that I made, and I called it my berry hill because I've got goji berries and blackberries and strawberries growing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted the sea berries like on one end, and that's exactly what they did. It's where I've been dumping my compost for years, so the soil is really beautiful.
Well, that wouldn't explain the disease.
So I just was curious of whether that was just a natural thing that sea berries did. I have read about sea berries for 10 years and was thrilled to have a sea berry in my life, and then I got one sea berry out of that. One.
That sounds like my apricots.
Okay, don't give up because it's worth it. I eat them every morning on my cereal.
I have them in number 4 pots on the north side of the house, so they're not like vigorously growing in these pots, but
trying it in another area. I mean, putting them out, or keep some in pot, and then the
I'll do that. And I just discovered another root coming up in the grass this year I hadn't, grubbed out. Wonderful. I'll do
all right.
that. Maybe I'll just get some bigger pots, plant them in the ground, and
sure.
Would that be okay? Do you think?
Try it.
I'll do it.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Thank
you for your expertise.
You bet. Mm-hmm. All right. Tim, if you have a quick question, we can do it.
Got a quickie. Okay, I got a white peach tree. It's about 4 years old. First year, about 12 peaches. After that, all the leaves fell off except for the very tips. And when the peaches form in the spring, you get little itty-bitty peaches, and they all fall off one by one. Do you have any idea what might be going on?
peach leaf.
You used to have a fir tree planted, I mean, growing where it is planted now.
First quick question, what variety do you know?
It's a white peach. Other than that, I can't remember what kind.
So do the leaves kind of get curly and kind of ugly looking?
Yeah. But then they all fell off, except at the tips.
And what's happening is you've got peach leaf curl, which is a common disease with peaches in our climate, and that's why it's important to get one that's resistant if you can. And what happens is the leaves get infected with peach leaf curl. They die, essentially, fall off, like you say. The new growth, that only happens during rainy season. That's why it's so bad for us, because by the time it stops raining, then you can get some new growth. But that's okay. But in the meantime, your fruit is also falling off because it's got nothing to support it.
Right. So we've got to wrap up here, but your choices are, there are some sprays that you can try for the dormant sprays, copper, Bordeaux mix. Okay. Jim is not too real happy with those.
It's a tough disease.
I was thinking of just cutting it down.
Yeah, and plant a resistant variety.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all the time we've got.
It's supposed to be resistant.
Well, that's why they don't say immune.
Check out the One Green World catalog, because they'll describe them that way, too.
All right, we're out of time. Jim, okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn.
And Tammy, you're the bestest. We'll be back in July, but not August. This is Glenn Andreessen. That's our story.
Join KABU and Kofallin Cultural Center on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for an evening of storytelling, live music, and film. Malian artist, author, and storyteller Baba Wage Jakite starts with a talk on the background of the Empire of Mali and the role of West Africa's oral historians before the screening of Keita, Heritage of the Griots, a film which blends modern events with magical realism, mythology, and history. Again, that's an evening of the culture of Mali, including the screening of the film Keita, Heritage of the Griots, on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street.